Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Les Tindall, who likes to be known as Laser Les for reasons which will become apparent as we talk to him. He has done research for some 16 years into petrophotoglyphs, which are photo-inscribed stones. And he believes that his particular research is unique throughout the globe. And I must say, I'm extremely interested to know about this. And I'm sure since I've given my subscribers Les's website, many of you will have been on there and you will therefore be able to picture what we're talking about. And hopefully, for those of you who haven't had access to the internet, we'll get Les to describe it in as much detail as he can so that you can get some impression of what he's talking about. So having said that, welcome to the program, Les.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thank you for having me on board for your show. It's a real honor.
Well, I find it very exciting to tap into these very special types of research, which not many people apparently go into. And what I find exciting is that invariably this old stuff, as I would call it, seems to go back far enough to suggest that the technology used may be related to ETs. So, and I've no doubt you'll have something to say on that. Now, when did you first get interested in this subject, bearing in mind it is so unusual, and did it happen before you started your research?
My research, my life, all changed and started on that fateful day, Christmas Day in 1994. With the discovery of very peculiar shaped stones that ultimately proved to provide hologram image codices, stories, messages, when properly illuminated. I labeled these artifacts. They were surface samples on private land in the southeast of Missouri, where I found them, and I've subsequently found samples in the southwest deserts of the United States, specifically the Mojave and the Sonoran Desert. There appear to be libraries or collections of these stone artifacts possibly throughout the globe, deposited in such a place where, when found, they would require the advanced technologies we have today to view and decipher. So with that being said, I label these petro or stone photoglyphs or photo inscriptions, and this would be a certain a subset of what we call rock art or petroglyph petroglyph study in archaeology would be under the discipline of rock art.
Right.
We understand rock art to be three types, the petroglyph or the carvings in stone, the pictoglyphs or the paintings on stone, and the geoglyphs or the perturbed land formations that form images similar to the what's found on the plains of Nazca, Peru. This category, photoglyphs, petrophotoglyphs, involves photographic imaging on the surface using all of the perturbations, contusions, angular formations of the stone as part of the image message. I spent many years in microelectronics. My degree from University in Arizona is in anthropology. I studied anthropology up until the point where I graduate, and then I worked in microelectronics for over 35 years with a specialty in laser processing. When I found these artifacts 16 years ago, I was along in life. I was well into my 40s, and it seemed very strange that artifacts that I could recognize as being tooled, and yet tooled by such precision technology as to not having any relative basis for identification within the realm of anything I had seen, and subsequently found anything anybody else had seen. Right. So petrophotoglyphs, photo-engraved stones, put together like integrated circuits with overlaid masks, photolithographic masks, that if I was to do such a process, it would involve photoresistive slurries. It would involve precision masks and lasers to embed those masks in the slurries, and then a process of continually overlaying masks, photolithographic masks, and connecting them in such a way that they form a video, a message, a hologram. Mm. When I tried to define petrophotoglyphs in the database of humanity, the online database, which is Wikipedia, I found that I was immediately vectored to the wiki bin, which is the wiki trash bin. In other words, yes, I'm overwhelmed. I sit there with this object in my hand. It clearly does what it's supposed to do when lit up. It does it at any time and any place, but yet they won't let me define it because it's original discovery. So that's where I am.
I think it's very sad. You can look through all history, go back a long way, and you've got a website called Forbidden Archaeology, and I think that's the type of thing they would listen. I think it's sad that the mainstream ignores things that probably don't fit in with their own beliefs. But anyway, I think we're in a time now when the truth of these matters is coming out. Now, something I want to ask you is, when you originally, say, found some of these stones with their often odd-looking inscriptions on them, how did you come to know that there were these sort of holographic images? I mean, did it develop from just finding? Yeah?
It took about a year of actually looking at these objects. If you go to the index page on the website impactoptics.com, you get to see two of the artifacts that I've spent, and of the 200 that I probably have in my possession, I've only been able to address essentially two of them in the 16 years of this research, because there's an extensive amount of information in there, and if you put it all together, if you put individual recording or photograph under the correct illumination and spatial conditions together, you form a hologram, a movie, a video message, a message that transcends language barriers. Anyone can understand and decipher using the database of knowledge, and any interpretations I might have added in the website, and there are a number of them, come with references to our database. So there would be visual references. To understand what we see, for example, there is one artifact that projects clearly a creature, and that creature has a single swirled horn. Mm-hmm. And if I was to Google creature with single swirled horn, I would immediately be vectored to the unicorn and descriptions of the unicorn.
Right.
And if I further identified that as standing in a ditch with around its neck, a band around its neck, with its tongue being pulled out with a cord, a blanket on its back, and a double-handled bridle, which all visually project from this hologram image, I am now talking about scripture from the oldest story in the Bible, the book of Job. Story, that is.
Right.
Story of...
It's interesting that you should have picked on that one, because that's quite, I would guess, in your reckoning, a special one. And I'm looking at the photograph of it now. Now, just explain first, how did you project that image that I now see in the photograph. I mean, how did you obtain that?
That image is a recording from the stone. There is nothing that I have done to that other than essentially light the stone and record the image.
Right. So you have your own method, it is yours evidently, of lighting the stone up. So this image then is projected beyond the stone. Not on it, but beyond it. Is that right?
The message, the image projects from the stone.
Right.
If anybody can do this, I use a computer and a simple program. I use Photoshop, any program that will take a scan, and I use high resolution as I can possibly get,
yes,
given the capacities of my computer, scanned digital positive photograph of the artifact, and I immediately invert or turn it, invert in the spectrum, in the visual spectrum, would turn reds into blues and vice versa. So a positive and negative photograph, we wouldn't look at a body of water and see red and understand it as much as if it was blue. And that's what we're dealing with here. These things were meant to be disguised. They're time capsules. They weren't meant to provide their information to anybody but those who had the technology to decipher them, to develop these projections. So any positive image on my website, you can capture, bring it in, and take it into a Microsoft Photo Editor and just do a simple invert function, take out some blue, put back some red, and you've got the image that you see in front of you. In other cases, I eliminate background data. I identify data through an imaging tool that identifies pixels of a similar color tone, and I can eliminate background information using that. But as for the image itself, that is the actual projection from the stone under the specific illumination conditions. These were shaman stones. They were carried around by the indigenous ones of civilizations throughout the world, and they might have been lit up for the shamans, who might have understood what they were, but they were eventually deposited in collections or libraries throughout the globe. Mm. Where I found these, the Chahokka mound builders, though there were no archaeological sites anywhere nearby, were the predominant civilization, indigenous ones in the area, and it's likely that they were given these artifacts from migrating individuals from the south, Peru, or there's a high degree of Mesoamerican influence as much as there is Babylonian and Mesopotamian influence in these stones. It's equal. It's all there.
Right. Now, I'd like to stay with the unicorn just for a moment, because you're linking in this projection, the unicorn tethered to the Mayan Quetzalcoatl and the Egyptian horse. Now, what is that supposed to signify?
That is on the website under the developing the images of the unicorn. There's a figure for many years. I thought there was some kind of epic battle being done. Once identifying the unicorn as the biblical image of the creature portrayed to Job at the end of his trials by fire, and Job went through he went through the village of the damned. He really did. He everything happened to him, and at the end, the Creator described this creature to Job in three chapters, very highly detailed creature. He wasn't doing anything but describing this creature. In chapter 41, though many people think the Leviathan word is a swirled snake, I mean, if you read it, you wouldn't made for your maidens, like it says, but you would this pastoral animal, this behemoth that was defined in chapter 40, unicorn that was defined in chapter 39. There are no more descriptive verses of anything in the entire Bible that I know of, and I beg anybody who knows anything about the Bible to find anything different than the description of this one creature to Job in chapters 39 through 41. 41 is line per line. The projection from the stone can be deciphered through the scripture. I would be able to write these chapters in the book of Job by looking at this stone if they were never written. And this is a viable way as to how the Creator might have sent messages down to the scribes in order to incorporate these things into Bible scripture and religious scriptures throughout the realm of humanity. The unicorn is essentially being pierced through the jaw. That comes right out of Job 41. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook through his nose or draw his tongue down with a cord? Both of those things are apparent. The other side of the piercing of the jaw, there's a creature, and that creature was, I thought it was an epic battle. I thought that was possibly one of the ancient demigods like Anzu, but when I saw the images of Quetzalcoatl, it became clear that instead of doing battle, these images are actually tethered together, right, which essentially ties, I believe I've done a development of it, of the image, the Quetzalcoatl image. If you click any one of the faces of the Quetzalcoatl image, you'll probably see the workup that I did, but it's identical to what has been manifest in statues and codices from Chichen Itza of Quetzalcoatl. This essentially ties the Bible, the scriptures of Euro India and China together with Mesoamerica and the Popol Vuh. So the Bible and the Popol Vuh are tethered or tied together. Further development of this codex, standing directly behind the unicorn is an emissary who is tied to an organ on the top which resembles an eye. So I call this the Third Eye Codex.
All right.
The second half of the stone, which comprises the unicorn petroglyph, actually shows this emissary transgressed into the what appears to be the new world or Earth, and he's sitting on a throne with a scepter. All you can see is his back from his left side, and it's overlooking an area. This is all detailed within the website, and this is essentially what manifests. This is the codex message that comes out of projects from these stones, tethered avatars of deities that we have known. We might call it somebody's mythology, like Mesoamerican mythology, though it was religion to them. Mm-hmm. And the unicorn here is described in Job. It's clearly an avatar of the Creator, a portal to the Creator. But what is it essentially here to me? It's a hologram. It's a projection from stone, scribed by a technology that is well in advance of anything we possess today. We're pretty sophisticated, but we're not that sophisticated.
It's fantastic. Now, one of the stones that does intrigue me, for a very special reason, which I will explain, is the embedded star map, because I see on it the star system, which you associate with
Orion.
What I wanted to ask you is, are those little circular dots which represent the stars, are they separate pieces of material embedded in the stone, or has it been treated or painted?
Oh, no, I put those dots that represent where the stars are. The yes. star map in the stone is actually just a crosshatch of linear lines embedded within the image. There is an image of a kneeling deity. Actually, he's not. His legs are bent, and he's. What I found he's doing is he's emanating from a pyramid, a triangular structure. He is identified by two symbols on the stone. One is a fish, and the other is a goat that he holds in his extended hand downward. The goat and the fish, comprising the astrological sign of the Capricorn, were the epithet of the Sumerian deity who was the firstborn of Anu. His name was Enki, and he was the champion of humanity. He spoke through the walls of Al-Trahasis' hut and told him to build a crescent-shaped vessel and save himself and his family and the species of animals on this earth. All that is captured within that one stone called the Genesis Petroglyph.
Right.
The image of the of Enki is excised, or it comes out from the stone. The fish comes out from the stone. Everything is excised or comes out from the stone. The image, but the map is incised or embedded within the image of the figure. Also incised within this figure is an arrow that's shot diagonally from the back to the front, from his back, and it penetrates the back and exits through below his chest. That would be a signature of Orion, given the mythology of Orion and the Greek mythology, as he was cast into the stars after Artemis shot him, based on what her brother Apollo told her was a creature in the water, but actually it was her lover Orion. So she was tricked into killing Orion. That's how the Greek saw it. The Mesoamericans, the Babylonians, the Sumerians might have seen it just like it's depicted here on this website. Enki holds a crescent-shaped vessel here, and in the developments on the website, that vessel clearly is portrayed as the Ark, as we have understood it, and as it is described in Genesis 6. Three levels with a window on the top. In zooming in then, and again, I'm working in the negative field, so if you were to hold this stone in your hand, you would see everything, but you wouldn't see it as it was meant to be seen, as we understand it. It would be like looking at the red ocean rather than the blue ocean. So I turn everything into a negative field and bring back the colors that need to be there in order to. But I don't paint. I don't draw. I'm not an artist. I'm just an anthropology researcher with an eye for the unique aspects of this technology, I guess, through my microelectronics experience. Star map is in there. Depicted also is Cirrus complex, and Orion, Cirrus being just basically to the left of Orion, if you were to look at it head on, and then on the other side of the stone, a very precision star map of Taurus. The head of a bull, in fact, manifests on the other side of the stone. Taurus is adjacent or just to the right of Orion, and also the Pleiades is identified within the in that all a crosshatch of lines that, when they intersect, form one of the stars that are identified within what we call a constellation.
Mm. It is interesting because they are, in my opinion, the groups of ETs that over many thousands and thousands of years have had quite a lot to do with humanity, having visited the Earth on many, many occasions. And I like the link that you've made in on your website where you talk of the Nephilim, and then you talk of the people from Orion who seem to have something to do with these petroglyphs, and you talk of Enki and Enlil, who, as far as I understand it, are from the Anunnaki. So it all seems to tie in. And, of course, the Anunnaki were very much the power behind the throne, as you might say, in Sumerian times. Have you linked Sumerian history with your research?
I tell you, Mike, when I started this research, I knew nothing of anybody who wrote about ancient astronauts other than Eric von Däniken, and I had read a couple of his books when I was in college back in the 70s, or very early 70s. And it just seems to me that, you know, it was understandable, but nothing stuck until somebody told me about this gentleman named Zachariah Sitchin. I read his 12th Planet and a variety of other books, not all of them in the Earth Chronicles, and then I had the opportunity of meeting with him in Sedona. I was living in Arizona at the time, and I met with him in Sedona. He was a keynote speaker, and we had lunch together, and asking him if he had ever seen anything like this, any artifacts that projected photographically detailed images that basically projected what he was writing about in his books, and and at that time his answer was no, he had never seen anything like this, but he studied the stones very carefully. He had seen so much in his life, and it was regretful that he had passed on just this past October. He was a brilliant mind. He was the guidebook for understanding what was projected from these stones. If I followed his research, and he was a researcher, he always started his conferences by saying that he was a reporter, and he was just reporting what was out there, and that's what he did. He gave it very plain and clear. That one stone, the Genesis petroglyph, is Enki's stone. It is essentially another message to humanity, because it requires our current technologies. It defines the cosmos. It defines a vector in that cosmos. It defines the individual who saved humanity. The Great Pyramid is in there. The individual, in further developments, was wearing a mask with a Mesoamerican face, similar to the face that was depicted at Palenque of Paykal II on his sarcophagus lid. That image, also that mask of Paykal II, also supports a nose that's pierced, which is a Mixtec, Olmec, Mayan ritual of ascension to sainthood or deity, signifying a deity, the pierced nose. It's in the codices from Chichen Itza, and it's understood as accepted in the field of archaeology that this in fact was the case. When an individual was getting their nose pierced, it wasn't anything but ascension. And so the mask being pierced, above the fish epithet on the rock, there's a jaguar, and you can see that if you just hold the rock in your hand. You can see the two eyes of the jaguar's head above the fish. That would be his epithet. So we have a tie-in to Mesoamerica, the Mesoamerican calendar. We have a tie-in to Mesopotamia and Genesis 6 and the flood, and we have an ancient time capsule that requires modern technology and to decipher. So it was meant for us to view, understand, as we see it, as I see it, it's a time capsule message telling us what's going to happen, where it's coming from, and I've even identified further coordinates, spatial, celestial coordinates on there, but, you know, without the help of SETI, and I have tried, I have spoke to the head of SETI, email-wise, who didn't seem to be willing to investigate, and that's the way it's been for 16 years, investigating the images. This is a platform, Mike, for a contact with an ancient, unknown intelligence, and they meant for us to be deciphering this at this time, though I'm not sure they meant for us to be ignoring or denying its existence as we are. That's what I could say.
Mm. I'm sure you keep your eyes on the planet Nibiru, which is known to some people as Planet X, which I gather is already in the solar system, making one of its cycles of 3,600 years. Now, as I understand it, that is the planet that the Anunnaki come from. And they used to visit the Earth every time they came into the solar system. And in Sumeria, they actually had a temple built for the spacecraft to land on. Now, has that cropped up in
the spaceport
research?
At Jupiter, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
The Temple of Jupiter, yes. Fine. So the Anunnaki seem to time very well here in the Sumerian story and what you're finding in the codex coming from these stones.
Let me ask you something, Mike. What would you think contact with an unknown, advanced an intelligence that could communicate with us would have to be advanced? Whether it would be more advanced or less advanced, I think we're hoping it'd be less advanced. But nevertheless, the platform that we're looking to is radio, electromagnetic radio waves. We have these vast antennas strung across canyons in Puerto Rico. We're looking for these. Everybody has a piece of the sky on their computer who signed up with this SETI search, and they're looking for signals. They're looking for bleeps. But
yes.
But when it comes to us by way of stones that have been scribed with video messages, that's I guess not sophisticated enough for us at this time. I don't know, even though it does require sophisticated, you know, current technologies, simple photography, really, to decipher.
Yeah, I think you're entirely.
What would you expect?
Yeah, I think you're entirely right there, Les, because there is another person, Klaus Donner, who does research that almost parallels what you do. And he went into the areas of Bolivia, Colombia, Ecuador, and he found statuettes and other things, figurines, objects. And under black light, what showed up were often constellations sort of inlaid into these figurines or stones or whatever they were, that of course showed up like white lights. Because of the black light, they highlighted these little images, and in a number of cases, they were of the Orion constellation. And some of the tools they found were so advanced, and yet they came from a period, I think, going back in some cases nearly 12,000 years. They were made of material, I think it was called Luddite, which is as hard as granite, and you really couldn't work granite even today, possibly, as well as what the original people did. So you have a similar parallel, Les, there to what you found, which is, if you like, ancient astronauts somehow leaving a message with these objects. But I suspect Klaus has found a similar difficulty in getting this information out to people as you have, because of the, I guess, the barriers that are put up. And I think you're right when you say it's perhaps not quite sophisticated enough for some people.
Right, and I appreciate you. I thought I've contacted everybody, but apparently I have not. Klaus Dana, who I believe is doing a parallel research at this time. I knew of no other person alive. I knew Richard Shaver was back in the 50s. Working with picture stones, he called them, where he actually painted the images that he saw projecting from the stone. He highlighted them and came out with some very sophisticated pieces, though I don't know as he went as far as to interpret all of them. He did give them titles that seemed to fit. The work of Klaus Dana using with ultraviolet lighting, that is unique, and that is in perspective of what I use in my process, which are three things. I use specific spectral illumination, and I use position, because these artifacts that I have found, these petrophotoglyphs, if you turn them 90 degrees, you'll get an entirely different image codex coming from it. Mm. Specific, not so much at this time the unicorn petroglyph, but the Genesis petroglyph. There are examples on the website where, in one perspective, it is the kneeling deity holding the crescent-shaped vessel. Turning it 90 degrees, it becomes a pyramid temple structure with the deity, and this is in photographic image detail, looking down from the shoulders down. He's looking down at this temple structure, which architecturally looks identical to what a temple structure would have appeared to be, with the curved shaped apse on the top, and there's a altar next to it. So. And there are images of individuals walking within, sized hundreds of times smaller than the deity looking over. That's available all through the website, those developments. I have an extensive number of them there. I've even isolated the deity image as he looks over the temple structure. But that is just a juxtaposition of the stone 90 degrees and a whole other image. That essentially turns Enki, who's holding the ark, to Enlil, who is looking over his temple structure of Ikur. And there's an altar there, and two figures walking up to this structure. And if I was to read Genesis, not real sure of the exact verse, but it would be Abraham and Isaac walking to that altar, and this possibly would be the angel who told Abraham that it's okay, he didn't have to smite his son, and this again is a portal of communication between a higher source and humanity, whether it be an angel, a burning bush, the unicorn. Jesus was a portal for this knowledge, this omniscient knowledge, to be transmitted to Earth. Muhammad. There were many tethered avatars. Quetzalcoatl was a portal, an avatar, a portal. It might have been creature form. It might have been deity form. Might have been even human form. These were all means of relaying this knowledge from the Nephilim. And it would be Planet X in the star map that I think is being tracked. I would venture to say this is what we're looking at.
Yes. Right. Still speaking about the Genesis petroglyph, on your website, you very kindly put an enlarged photograph, drawing, or whatever it may be, which is very detailed, that is, as you have described it, an ancient astronomic stone. Now, at the bottom, where it comes to something of a point, you've got the Great Pyramid of Giza shown there. Now, how does that connect in with this work? I mean, with the messages? Is it of great significance?
Oh, absolutely. One of Zachariah Sitchin's books, The Wars of Gods and Men, talks of Enki's son being captive in Khufu, the Great Pyramid Egypt. And if you look at the structure of the three pyramids and you look at the belt stars in Orion, there is a general consensus that they are aligned.
Yes.
Orion has been a predominant constellation throughout the history of humanity. A correspondent, Gary David, who lives in Arizona, has done research and found Anasazi settlements throughout the southwest, hundreds of miles apart, configured to the Orion constellation. Mm-hmm. There is a message and it's a singular message, but it's been transmitted throughout the history of humanity, at least for the past 3,600 years, it's now coming to light as to who the messages came from and why they sent them. I think we're going to understand that here in the next few years. Has a great change in our understanding of just who we are and where we came from, and it won't be a bad thing. It will be a good thing if these tethered gods who actually one entity walked through humanity and portrayed as various deities and avatars and symbols and if this deity scattered religion and scattered language for a reason, then possibly we'll understand that in 2 years when the return of Nibiru, and this is something I've got to believe based on my research, we will all come together as understanding under one religion and possibly even understanding under one language.
Yes, I think you're referring there to the Mayan calendar, aren't you, and 2012, where this cycle ends and obviously a new one begins.
A new cycle, right. Not the end of humanity, but the beginning of a new humanity who
exactly,
will have a better understanding of where we came from and the intelligent design theory might just be the accepted fact of humanity after the proof walks among us. You understand? The images I get would place these deities at about over 200 feet in length, in height, 20 stories.
Yes. Mm.
Quite a significant entity to deal with, and certainly convincing enough for me that we're not alone and we're not on top of the food chain anymore.
Right. Now, just a sort of a side issue here, the stones appear to be broken. Were they originally full pieces or were they, as you see them, like just broken bits that were inscribed?
Everything you see is exactly as it was found. The stone that comes in two pieces was actually found 15 meters apart, embedded in a dirt road after a torrential flooding occurred in the previous summer. These artifacts were surface samples. I found the Genesis petroglyph in a riverbed nearby. I found, well, I collected almost 200 of these surface samples. I never did a dig in the area at all. And
nice.
And as it was, it's essentially a library that was unearthed by these torrential floods, most likely deposited by the elders and the shamans of the Chahoka in the Midwest of the United States, the mound builders. And why they build those mounds, no, today nobody knows. But what essentially happened that day was a discovery of objects that project hologram messages and in photographic detail, which is technology well beyond our current.
Have you actually decoded all of the stones you've got then?
The way these stones are decoded is you record the projection, and when you see something like a that you don't understand, like a tongue being pulled out of its mouth, or a blanket on its back, or anything, all I have to do is go online and type it into a Google page, whatever I see, and there'll be references. Wikipedia is a wonderful reference, even if they deny the fact that I'm holding something that they don't want to know about. It's that simple. You know, our database of knowledge today is such that you don't have to go to school. All you have to do is be able to put your thoughts into a computer, and you'll get the information eventually that you're looking for.
Yes. I must say, some of the visual projections really look quite attractive, and I gather from your site that you actually transfer these, am I correct, to Chromalux metal panels, which you have available for sale on your site?
I do. I support this research from these incredible image projections. Chromalux is the most fantastic media I've ever seen for printing. It's a hardened plastic that's coated. It's already mounted. They're large, and the print, they use a process called dye sublimation, which incorporates temperature, pressure, and time. It comes out incredible. The surfaces, you can wash it with Windex. It's like totally framed, and the images that project are images directly from the stone under the specific lighting conditions that bring out the image structure that was meant to be brought out. Whether you see what I see or not, there is information in there, and that information will mean maybe something different to you. But nevertheless, there is information in there, and the images were not put in there by anybody who's alive today, or anybody, in my opinion, who has ever lived on this earth. I'm talking about, these are alien artifacts. This is alien arts and crafts. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But yes, they are available through an art gallery in Dunedin, I think, and also in Clearwater, Florida, where I live. And phone numbers are there. They would be happy to help you out. Any image on the website can also be built into a Chromalux panel, any size. Really quite beautiful. But that's how I support the research, and it's. They're not accepted at this point. Nobody will put down what they're doing and accept the fact that we're in contact.
Mm. Well, I think before the end of the year's out, we're hoping that disclosure will have long taken place, and you may find a different situation developing, I think.
That would be interesting. It's difficult for us to understand what life would be like knowing that the one who we pray to actually is here nearby. I know that the ancients sat with their deity. They were there. They built temples to him, and those deities sat up in those temples and commanded the respect that was due to them. And whether that might happen today, whether we would respect the deity that we pray to or recognize, or would we go to war against the god who we go to war in the name of? I don't know. It's difficult to say. You know, we're such a diverse mentality today that we can justify and explain anything. But
yes.
When these individuals who scribe these stone hologram messages for us come back, I think the issue will be quite apparent, and they'll be here, and we'll be here with them.
Yeah. Now, as we're talking about your panels, although many of our listeners will already have your website address, it might be a good idea if you gave it out on air for those who haven't.
Okay, it would be Impact Optics, IMPACTOPTICS, one word, impactoptics.com. And
right.
If you type in to a Google search engine the word petrophotoglyph, you'll see that in the world at this time, I am the only resource for that particular artifact, these particular artifacts, and that's something I've got to be somewhat proud of and also somewhat concerned about, because if nobody else has gone in and found and discovered such objects, then it leaves me open to those who will say that I'm just cloud watching. There's a proper name for it, pareidolia. And whether I've done a study on that on my website, where I've actually taken a branch bark from a tree and used bilateral symmetry, which is a technique I use at times to develop the image structure. And there's definitely image faces that can be seen, though they weren't put there intentionally by any entity at all. But the images that I get, that's different.
Indeed, in my
opinion.
Well, Les, it's been extremely absorbing and interesting to listen to you and your knowledge. We're coming up, in fact, now, because it's been like that to the last couple of minutes of the program. And as usual, I want the last minute to introduce next week's guest. So can I ask you, what are you doing at the moment? Just very briefly, are you giving talks, doing workshops or anything like that?
I'm just doing my research, Michael, and I want to thank you very much for having me on your show. It was a great privilege and honor. And anybody who would like further information can certainly contact me through the website. There are a number of links. I'd be glad to correspond, to answer questions, provide information and images, anything with anybody. Right now, I live here on Clearwater Beach and do my research here through these galleries. I develop images and support it through that. But thank you very much for having me, Michael. I do appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Les. Thank you very much. Right, friends, that was terrifically interesting. Next week, I have Virginia Essene. She was a guest who had to cancel a few months ago. We're going to talk about the book which came out in 1994 called You Are Becoming a Galactic Human, which she wrote with Sheldon Neidel. I understand it's being reviewed and updated. That was a fantastic book in its time, talking about the photon belt, our true history, etc. So that, again, should be a very good chat. So thank you for being with me today, and I hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.